Hello and welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this today on Monday, March 2nd, 2026. I am Carl James, joined by Chris Feenan, Zach Horwitz, and Cassidy Palmer. All right, it was a 3-2 week, all on the road against very good mid-major programs. Note that in RPI speak, that is 3.91 wins to 1.4 losses, given that it was all on the road. But that's the RPI speak as far as the numbers go. So this included a midweek road game, a rare midweek road game to a mid-major in Cincinnati at Xavier. So it was kind of a Johnny Holstaff day, but Indiana pretty much handled things pretty well and got out of Cincinnati with a 10-4 win over the Musketeers. Then they went to Bowling Green, Kentucky for a 4-game set, which Indiana treated kind of as Friday, Saturday, Sunday typical, and then almost kind of a replacement midweek in the late Saturday game. The Friday game, the Hoosiers dropped by a score of 1-4, which it's a Friday game that the offense just did not show up for. Tony Newbeck did another great job that unfortunately ended in a loss. The Saturday doubleheader was a pitcher's duel in the afternoon and a shootout in the evening. The Hoosiers won the pitcher's duel, lost the shootout. We're down by 7-1 in the shootout and managed to only lose the game by 2. So there was a pretty big comeback offensively, and a lot happened on the offensive end in that game. And then another take care of business game on Sunday. Jackson Bergman was another solid outing by Jackson Bergman, and the Hoosiers kind of felt like they had this one in hand most of the time, and won a pretty solid 7-3 outing. So I know I saw some stuff online. There was a lot of discussion about a lot of people very unhappy with that late Saturday game. Chris and I got to go to that doubleheader. It was, overall, the whole day felt pretty positive for the Hoosiers. The start was a little rough, but it actually could have been a lot worse. And the team had fight. They came back. They didn't just roll over when they were down 7-1. So that's the recap essentially of the week. We'll start off as we had last week with asking Cass what she kind of saw, if there was a statistical point that was of interest up to this point in the season. Cass, what do you got?
Yeah, so I figured since I focused on the pitching last week in our small sample size grain of salt phase of the season, I take a look at some small sample size grain of salt offensive stats this week. The thing that stood out to me, there were kind of two separate, kind of related, but separate things that stood out to me. The first one was just runners in scoring position, period. Because there were opportunities with runners in scoring position in all four games of the weekend. Now, granted, there were many, many, many more in games 3 and 4 compared to game 1 and even game 2. But it was more what was done in those situations. In games 3 and 4, in game 3, the shootout, IU hit .385 with runners in scoring position. That's going to help you score a butt ton of runs, just in general. But particularly when compared to 167 with runners in scoring position in game 1, and there were far fewer of those opportunities to begin with. But even just being productive with runners in scoring position, that can be a hit that can be walk, hit by pitch, an error, put it in play and make them do something, sack bunt, sack fly. I did not count the wild pitch strikeout, reach on an reach and then a home run immediately afterward. I did not count. If you're swinging at wild pitches, that nope, that does not get to count as productive. But in that same game three, 50% of the plate appearances with runners in scoring position were productive, and 47% in game four. Even then, in game one, 37% were productive, 37, 38% were productive with runners in scoring position. There just weren't enough of those opportunities. Also, kind of killing it in that first game was the fact that a full third of the at bats with runners in scoring position ended in double plays. And in fact, there were, over the course of the weekend, there were four at bats with runners in scoring position that ended in double plays. It was just one of those weekends. It happened sometimes. Hit it real hard, line out, and catch the runner off the base. It happens, unfortunately. But that was a with as few opportunities with runners in scoring position as there were in game one, that was a slight problem there. But the other thing I wanted to take a look at was in all of the games, it seemed like there were at least a fair few number of guys who reached base. But the percentage of them, the rate of them reaching with two outs was also a big difference. In that first game, 11 guys reached, but six of them reached with two outs. That just makes it so much harder to score if your first guy is getting on with two outs. Compare that to game two, which was a win, and only 1 out of 10 that reached base reached with two outs. And so that was just something that stood out. Only a third of those who reached base in the shootout reached with two outs. So two-thirds of them reached base with fewer than two outs. That's a good recipe. 75% of them reached with fewer than two outs in game four. When they can do that more, like yes, twice as many guys reached base in game four compared to games one and two. But it really does matter when you're getting on base, or at least when your first couple of guys are getting on base. And if we can do that with fewer than two outs, that's much more of a recipe for success. So those were the, again, small sample size, fun grain of salt stats for this week. Chris, you guys were the only ones who were able to see even part of the games this weekend. Who earned your red belts for this week?
Yeah, it was one of those streamless weekends. I feel like we hadn't had one in a while. It really surprised some people. Like, wait a minute, this actually happens. Like, sometimes it's, yes, unfortunately, it does. We did have Ben, doing his thing. That was two double headers he did in a 2 week period, solo double headers. So, shout out to Ben Holler for that. He did a great job. He would not let me bring him anything from the concession stands when I offered late in game two. I yelled up to the box. He was like, no, nah, I'm good. But so he didn't want anything. I would have brought it to you, Ben, if you're listening. So yeah, it was a great time. It's a nice stadium, very friendly, very hands up. Like we just walked in. They don't charge for admission. You just walk in. It's right off like the road. Like cars are driving by, and when you walk in, it's a beautiful campus. That's what the guy noticed. Me and Carl had to walk what 10 minutes from the car, and really a gem of a campus. The architecture, the buildings with the pillars, and yeah, the football stadium's smaller, but it was really nice. And everything there was smaller, but really nice. So West Kentucky, I really was impressed with the campus, the people. The student section was wild. These guys do not stop. It went on inning after inning. They were set up down the right field line for game one. So where we were sitting, we really didn't hear much of it. When I went down that line a little bit to hang out, I did hear a little bit of it. But for game two, they sat right behind us. And you could hear they were getting on everyone. We learned a lot of things about the IU players we didn't know. Like apparently, I think Pete Haas doesn't have an iPhone. He can't use FaceTime. They were literally heckling that. Like, he doesn't have an iPhone. He can't use FaceTime. Old school, like, what's the name of your teddy bear? And all these old one-liners these guys had for the players. But I mean, it was good. It was good spirited fun. They weren't cursing. They weren't talking about people's families. None of that, SEC nonsense we've seen when we've gone up there. But yeah, it was a, if I had a fan red belt, I would give it to the student section of Western Kentucky University. They all had a lot of mustaches too, I noticed. They really did. They had a lot of mustaches. They all looked very similar. They all had a very similar look, every single one of them. I don't know what it was. It was pretty wild. But student section, I tip my hat to you. It was really a good job. I really liked it. As far as our awards, obviously I have three to give out. And two, ironically, they started this MLB Draft Appellation League. I don't know how many years ago, but it's pretty new. And it's a wood bat league, and there's only like eight teams, and they've got great team names and great logos, and it's a really cool league. And two of our guys who won red belts tonight played in that league. So for the pitching red belt, a alumni from the Burlington Sock Puppets, excuse me, Sock Puppets, is Tony Newbeck. I gave him the pitching award. He retired the first 9 out of 10 on a Friday night. Only gave up, what, three hits the whole time. He had five strikeouts, no walks, 71 pitches. I think he could have continued, but I know with his past, maybe some injuries in the past, they're probably waiting to lengthen him out more. But really a great job from Tony to set the tone. I know the bats couldn't get him any runs, but just because we didn't win the game, a pitcher can win the red belt in that game. And Tony Newbeck gets the Joey Dunnane Award for me. And then we have an alumni from the Pulaski River Turtles, okay, Braden Ricketts. All right, Braden Ricketts, 10 hits, 7 RBIs, 5 runs scored, and 2 home runs. He killed it. And the Big Ten just gave him Freshman of the Week, which was cool. The last time we won that, Jake Hanley won last year. I don't have the date and the stats, but I just know he won last year. He was the last one to do it. And when you look at Ricketts' home runs, sure, they were great in the fourth game. And you look at his numbers throughout the entire four games, five games, really, if you count the midweek. I really thought one of his biggest hits was game one. We were there of game one of the doubleheader, so game two of the series, when he drove in that add-on run, right? He gets a big hit, eighth inning, and we had passed up so many opportunities with first and second, first and third, and guys weren't coming in the double plays that Cass mentioned. And for Braden to just get through there and give us the lead, it was big. So Braden Ricketts gets our Alex Dickerson Award for the week. Now, our third member also played Summer League, not in the Appalachian League, but in the Western Canadian Baseball League. All right, but it does have a connection to IU because his team was the Okotoks Dogs. And you're like, I know that Okotoks. Well, how do I know that Okotoks? Matt Lloyd's hometown. Okay. IU legend, Matt Lloyd. He actually also played for the Okotoks Dogs. I guess if it's your hometown, you're going to play summer league there. You could just stay at home, right? So he decided to do that. And you ask, who is this Okotoks Dogs alumni who won the Tony Butler Award? And that's Aiden Krause. Okay. He showed an amazing speed. Get off the minute the ball was hit off the bat to right field, covered a ton of ground, running, sliding, made the catch. And this was in a nothing-nothing game. So there actually was, I think, a bunt, an error, some things after that. So if he hadn't caught that, who knows which way that inning would have went. But Aiden Krause gets a defensive red belt. So we got a Burlington Sock Puppet, a Pulaski River Turtle, and an Okotoks Dog this week for our red belts of the week. We're going to kick it over to Carl. He's going to talk about the Big Ten is starting up. I know for those of you who've been following IU baseball for a while, you're like, wait a second, I can't be the Big Ten yet. We haven't played our 10 games yet, home games at the Bart, like we used to against random teams. But no, with this new alignment, we have 2 extra weeks of the Big Ten. So it's starting this week, and we are starting at the Bart. It's all yours, Carl.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. Thank you, Chris. Yes, first week of Big Ten play is about to get underway. Now, one thing that has not changed is, thanks to Wisconsin, there is an odd number of teams in the Big Ten, 17. So there has to be bye weeks, and of course, due to the way that the weather is in good portions of the Big Ten, the league does its best to stack those early on. So it's really only a portion of the league that's going to be in play. We're going to have Illinois at USC, Michigan State at Nebraska, Oregon, and Mark Wasikowski will be taking his Oregon Ducks to play his former team, the Purdue Boilermakers. This will be the earliest that that Wasikowski has played a game, has coached a game at Alexander Field. In the season, even though he used to coach that team. So they'll be playing on the grass in Alexander this early. I'm curious exactly how good that Purdue agriculture team is, how green they're able to make that grass look this early in the season. I do think they're going to be better than the Penn State crew was last year, but that's really not a high bar. That was like that looked like they were playing on dirt, but the whole field dirt, that is. Number one team in the country, UCLA, will be going to Ohio State. I'm sure Ohio State's, trying to look for that one series they can win this year. They had to do it against Oregon last year, so maybe they do it against UCLA this year. You just don't know. And of course, IU is going to be hosting the very much reeling Washington Huskies, and Zach will be giving us more on that.
Yeah, thank you, Carl. I'm taking Chris's job a bit because Tuesday's midweek against Northern Kentucky is now canceled. So,
A whole preview, Zach. I had it on the paper. It was, now I can't read it.
yeah, that one is canceled, not postponed. So I do not think they're making that up against the Norse. But there's a weekend series against the Washington Huskies, who are now 3-9 on the season. They won today, actually on a Monday. They don't play a midweek game, so they had a four-game series against San Diego State. So they're now 3-9 on the season. I guess they're in somewhat of a similar spot to Indiana, where the record is not maybe exactly where they want to be, and they've underachieved. But Indiana certainly has not underachieved to the level of Washington, who opened the season 0-4 in Puerto Rico, where they were outscored 36-7, and they did not score a run until the fourth game of the season. So really tough opening weekend for the Huskies. Then they had a series loss to Loyola Marymount. And then just today, they split their four-game series with San Diego State. But as we've seen in the past, especially last year, that it's conference play, anything can happen in the Big Ten. But when you look at the actual roster, Washington, they do have three competitive starters, just like Indiana does, guys that you know are going to be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, weather permitting, I should say, but all three games at the BART. It'll start probably with right-handed pitcher Noah Kenney, who pitched over four innings in relief against Wake Forest. That was in Puerto Rico, and he started one game since. So I would assume that he's now moved into a weekend role. He leads the team with an ERA of 3.77. That's in a large sum of pitching innings of guys that are qualified. They also have another right-hander, Gunnar Nichols, who's a transfer from Pepperdine, but he has not pitched past the fourth inning. He's their strikeout leader with 18. So that's probably their best arm and a 191 batting average against. And then their final starter is another right-hander, Bryce Johnson, who transferred from Oregon State. Low strikeout numbers, high walk numbers. That is something that I think Indiana could really see as a strength as they've moved this year, kind of the identity to a smaller, small ball kind of feel on the offensive end, less home runs, and just kind of moving runners over. Moving them in. That's kind of just the identity this year for IU. And if you look at the Washington pitching a little bit further, they have one, maybe two reliable bullpen arms. Both of those right-handers, Carson Bozal, who's been their high leverage guy, only allowed one run in nine innings pitched. So he's definitely their best guy. We should see him at least once, if not twice, this weekend. And then Tommy Brandenburg also, he leads the team in appearances, but hasn't really seen the stats go his way. But When you look at this, all their best pitchers, the guys who've thrown the most innings, they're all right-handers. So that's probably good. They don't really trust the left-hander pitching that they do have, which definitely poses a strength to Indiana. And at the plate, as you can imagine, considering they hadn't scored a run in their first three games of the year, they don't have too many stars on the offensive end, but they do have two guys that are up there in the Big Ten, actually, in statistics. Both outfielders, Braden Terry, who transferred from a junior college, he's hitting 405 with the team lead in hits at 15. And then LSU transfer outfielder Mick Paul over a 1,000 OPS. But as a team, they strike out a ton, 110 strikeouts on the season. That's the second in the conference behind Ohio State. They're bottom five in pretty much every statistical category there is in the Big Ten. And I know Chris always likes to have a notable alumni. So Washington's notable alumni is Tim Lincecum.
Oh, that's a good one, Zach.
Yeah, so that's all
That's
I
a
got
good
for you.
one.
They have 26 guys that played in the MLB from Washington. Tim Lincecum is definitely the best one.
Solid. Solid. He might be at the game. You don't know. What? Bloomington's a, come on, what a superpower now. Football people want to go there, check it out. You never know.
All
Now,
right.
Carl, a little just add to the script real quick because I
Yeah.
got the Norse thing canceled and I realized it is the first weekend at the BART. I just wanted to go over a couple things about the BART.
Yep.
I know Zach mentioned, the game times could be, switched weather permitting. It's supposed to be 5 p.m., 1 p.m., and 12 noon for the weekend. Obviously, rain could change everything. Definitely try to look at Twitter, iobase.com, all that Facebook group. If changes are made, we'll throw them up there. If Friday goes off the way it should at a 5 p.m. start, I did see a couple guys practicing skydiving over the BART. So I don't know if possibly the Bison is going to enter skydiving for us as it did. So you can't see, right? You can't see on TV, but I wore my Bison, okay, for that exact reason tonight. Now, he's not going to jump out of a plane, but Friday night, rumor has it, is the first appearance of the Bison at the BART. My opinion, my prediction is that someone's going to drive him in from the bullpen in that real cool IU baseball golf cart we got. That's just what I think would happen. I also sent that idea to Jeremy Gray. What he does with it, I don't know. So that's it. Just Friday, we got Bison. And then just for the regular weekend, a lot of this stuff is back, that fan favorite stuff. Like Fridays, it's always nine innings of winning. Just fill your name out, put your name in the box. And every inning they pull a name out and you get a prize. So, I mean, it's pretty cool. It goes on the entire game. But if you don't put your name in the beginning, you can't win anything. Saturdays is always Bark in the Park. This year it's promoted by Mom Water. We call it something different at the football games, but it's officially called Mom Water. And they're going to give a dog a free gift every time. So if you bring your dog, you're going to get a free gift courtesy of Mom Water. And on Sundays, children who are 12 and under, when the games are over, weather permitting, they let you on the field. The kids can run the bases and get autographs from the players. Like they line up by the dugout and the kids can kind of walk through and do selfies and all this. And they also do the bingo on Sundays, baseball bingo. Get your sheet. Things happen. Like if there's a balk, you fill it out or whatever might happen. All this stuff happens every weekend. So Friday's always nine innings of winning. Saturday's always Bark at the Park. And Sunday's always kids run the bases with the autographs and the bingo. I know a lot of people who listen to this have already been there, but maybe, some new people are learning. I mean, it's like $10 a ticket for an adult. It's $5 for a kid. And a kid is 18 and under, for those who don't know. It's not like you got it. The 12 and under thing is run the bases, but a child ticket at the BART is $5, and that's 18 and under. So it's one of the better deals of Bloomington, in my opinion. And I know it's very weather permitted, and I totally get it. If you're not a diehard, maybe you don't go when it's freezing. But when it's nice out, a lot of the folks in town come, and I know they appreciate a big crowd whenever they can get it. The guys really do. We did get this Tuesday canceled, anticipated rain. Hopefully, we get some good weather for the weekend. You heard Zach, this team that we're playing, I mean, this should, you come out, you're going to see us hit, you're going to see us score. Apparently, you're going to see us walk a lot, strike out a lot of guys. I mean, this could be fun. It's the Michael Penix series. Why wouldn't you want to come? I don't understand. Nah. Anybody who wants this first weekend, I get it. It's not 70 degrees. Me and Carl were in baseball heaven on Saturday. Okay. First pitch, 67 degrees. It went up to like 72. And then this week, Monday, we wake up and there's ice on the car. So it was like, were we really there, Carl? Like, did that happen? Nah, it was wild. But I just wanted to add that in as far as the bar, just add that a little bit to Zach's preview.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're gonna have a brief roundtable discussion. So the team is currently at 5-7. I did look it up. That compares last year's start was a 6-6 start. So just to kind of in general, if there's a specific point you want to pull out, just how are we feeling about how this team is progressing from North Carolina to this point here, heading into Big Ten play? Zach, you want to jump in?
Yeah, sure. So I look at mainly the box score this weekend. While the Indiana did split 2-2, they had 7 hits in the first game and then 10 in the second, which 10 hits and only 3 runs, but they're still putting the ball in play, getting some hits. And then that 14-12 game, they had 14 hits. And then the final game of the series, if I look here, Indiana had 9 hits. So I think against a pitching staff of Washington's, which I just mentioned, they don't really have too many guys that go long innings. They only have one, maybe two reliable bullpen arms. Like, this is a big chance for Indiana to score runs this weekend. I think this is a very good opportunity back at home. First weekend series, no more doubleheader. They're not facing the best pitching in the world. I think this is really like a good situation. It's a good spot for this team, and I think they're playing. And the opposition, they should take 2 of 3. Indiana needs to take the series, if not sweep the series. And I think I mentioned this on Twitter in one of the posts. I think it was in the second game, the one that Indiana won 3-1, where they can get a split outing from two pitchers. In this case, it was Brayton Thomas, who allowed 1 run through 4.2 innings, and then Gavin Siebold had another stellar performance out of the bullpen, 3.1 innings pitched, 0 runs, and then in that one, Jackson Yarberry finished it off. That was just because Siebold was nearing 50 pitches, and just in case they needed him the next day with a 4-game series. But this is what they're going to have to do right now. Roles aren't figured out. They're not that deep in the bullpen right now. Guys that they can really trust, especially early in conference play. You're starting now. It's the beginning of March, so this is where the season really matters for Indiana. So there's only a couple guys they're going to put out there, and they're going to need Newbeck to do what he's been doing, getting 5 innings done. They go to the bullpen. Maybe one or two guys finishes that off. The next day, you go to Thomas and Siebold. The day after that, you have Bergman. You have Yarberry. Just kind of slim down the bullpen. If you get good outings out of your starters, that's which they've gotten pretty much every weekend so far. I think that's a recipe for success. So I'd assume Indiana's going to win the series this weekend, if not sweep it. And that's what I'm going to finish off on. I think they need the series.
Yeah, I would agree with that. One thing that I found was interesting is obviously Yarbrough got the save in the first game of the doubleheader. Did not technically get a save, but did pitch the ninth on Sunday. I'm almost thinking they're eyeing him in that one inning role at the end of the game. Because I think in addition to, I agree, Zach. I think it was more. If they felt there was more in the tank with Siebold, they would have let him run out. But they're also they've used Siebold a lot, so they're wanting to not overstretch that arm. But I actually mentioned this. I think it was was it in my article? I'm trying to remember if it was in my article. It was on the class podcast. But that I kind of felt that Yarberry seems to me to be a one inning guy. He seems to do pretty well in his first. 15 pitches or so, and then his struggles have always seemed to be after that. So I think maybe it's the best way to get him 2 innings in a weekend is to split that up in 2 games. And to me, he looked pretty sharp. I'll say the arm that impressed the most that was a surprise was Ivan Mostalski. The 2 innings we saw from him were legit. The stuff is real. He was pounding the zone. He was quick pitching. I mean,
So
literally.
many times, I don't know if it's a quick pitch. I think he just goes. He just doesn't mess around. The guy, I know
Yeah.
the hecklers kept saying he's quick pitching, but
Well,
if you quick pitch every time, it's not a quick pitch.
I guess that's true.
He was, you nailed it. He was about, give me the ball, go. Give me the ball, go.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Whoever's manning the pitch clock when he's on can just take a break. Just go grab a hot dog. It's you don't
Go
it's really not something that needs to be dealt with when he's pitching. I mean, literally, I looked up. I don't think he threw a pitch when the pitch clock was in single digits, his entire two innings.
But they kept yelling, the hecklers, he's quick pitcher. No, it's when he takes a long time, he's long pitching. Like
Yeah.
that's the very rare long pitch from Mastowski. No,
Yeah.
that was a great point. He was great. He was great stuff. And of course, Seabold, I mean, he still has a zero ERA. He's been amazing. And then to your point, Carl, with Yarbrough, wasn't in the ninth inning of the second game in Carolina, he got in some trouble and he wiggled his way out of it. Well, technically, maybe not, but you know what I mean. He
Yeah.
wiggled his way out of that. He did what he had to do to get out of that inning. And that was first and second, nobody out. So that also shows that he could bear down when the pressure's on in the late in the game.
Cass, you got some thoughts?
Yeah, to me, my first thought, like the first phrase that came to mind was cautiously optimistic. Yes, there have been some rough patches. We've seen some more snowball innings so far this year than we've seen over the last few years. But again, we kind of hit this a lot last week, but the level of competition against UNC and LSU, that can happen. So if we can get those snowball innings a bit more under control, and some of that just comes from finding the right spot for the right pitchers. This team has the offense to generally compete against most anyone, at least maybe outside of the toppest Omaha contenders. And so I think Big Ten play is gonna go pretty well with what we've seen so far and what the Big Ten schedule looks like.
Yeah,
I
the
think
Big Ten schedule is IU got the dice came up really nice for IU with this schedule. Miss UCLA, miss USC, which are the two ranked teams.
Now that does mean there's not as much by way of resume building stuff, but do the job in Big Ten play. At least hold your own in Big Ten tourney. That could be some good results right there, even with a few bum losses early in the year.
Yeah. The only real danger I see in the schedule from an RPI perspective is Washington. I mean, they're a team that if they continue down the road that they've shown, they could be a little bit of a, a drag from an RPI perspective, but nobody else really is. And almost every Big Ten team has a decent win so far this year. Even I used, I mean, I think that Xavier win, honestly, I think Western Kentucky is a, I was looking at Warren Nolan's ELO metrics, and it's interesting. Yeah, IU and Western Kentucky are like right next to each other in that regard, and that's still in like the top 60.
Which kind of shows the split was an accurate gauge of the two teams that the two teams are statistically real close to each other. It resulted in a split four game.
Yeah, I know
Well,
I've seen
Saturday, 15-15 tie on Saturday. Like an exact split. It was crazy. We started doing the math in the car.
And I really want to stress, because some people are like, then how is a team like IU, a perennially good baseball team in the Big Ten, matching up with this Western Kentucky team. Western Kentucky won over 40 games last year. And yes, there was some questions because there was a lot of roster turnover. Trust me, that is a legit mid-major program. And I know they're not even like in the mid-major rankings right now. But I mean, they've played the majority of their games against power teams and have split them so far. They're a legit mid-major, and that's not, and honestly, four game series are, it's very tough to win a four game series against anybody. To, and Chris made the point that, IU lost one to a really bad team a long time ago. Those things
Talia.
happen. Yeah. Those things happen. It's one of those things that just happened. And IU really played this as a weekend series with kind of an extra almost midweek game as the second game on Saturday. So honestly, I see that more on lines of a midweek. And yes, the game was a loss. And yes, we would like them to have not gotten as in bad a spot early on. But again, I think I watched that, and to me, Rivera's stuff was still pretty good. They seem to have his number, and there are days you see that. And conversely, when we saw Pete Haas pitch, he did really well against them. So, yeah. So let's move on now, because Chris, because spring training is ramping up, and Chris has got some information about our alumni.
Right. So today we had Devin Taylor getting game action for the Las Vegas. Are they the Las Vegas A's yet? I think they are. Maybe they're the Oakland A's. I don't know who they are. But Devin Taylor got in the game today. He played some left field, got an at bat. He did go 0 for 1. But for him to be able to already be in a spring training major league game, that's impressive. They must think a lot about him. Nick Mitchell got in the game over the weekend, a split squad. He singled in an RBI. So these are some new names that we hadn't heard last week. Your regulars were out there: Kyle Hart, Jack Perkins, Philip Glasser got out there. He stole a bag and got a hit. So Craig Yoho, a couple of strikeouts, big shock there. Probably got made pitching ninja. I didn't check. We did have our first Hoosier versus Hoosier spring training AB, and that was Scott Efros versus Kyle Schwarber. Efros walked him. I guess that's a win for Schwarber, but I know he'd rather have gotten either a hit or struck out. A walk's kind of like, for Schwarber, I feel like it's like a tie. He either wants to crush or just get out. Speaking of Schwarber, he's our lone Hoosier for the World Baseball Classic. So he's on Team USA. I know David Wright of the Mets was Captain America, about 10 years ago when he was playing for Team USA. Maybe Kyle Schwarber becomes the new Captain America. He hits a couple bombs, some clutch hits. This all starts up, for those of you who don't know, it's before we even record again. So it starts Friday and Saturday, 8 p.m. for pool play, and then they take a day off, and then it's Sunday and Monday, 8 p.m. again. They're all on Fox. So you want to root for Team USA for the World Baseball Classic, follow Kyle Schwarber, see how he's doing. But the list of Hoosiers grows. To see Devin Taylor out there, I think is a huge deal. And really proud of this is a guy we watched, go through the whole thing. He leads, career home run leader a whole bit. And he was always down to earth. He was always cool with everybody. And to see him out on the field, it was to me, it was a big deal. I was very, very happy when I got a text from somebody that, like, he's up next innings. And you could, like, pull it up on the video. So watching our Hoosiers, always important. Follow at Pro Bowl Hoosiers if you're not already. At David Welch, if you're not already. They really do a great job following our alumni. It's not easy, with so many damn Hoosiers now, you gotta really work harder. Used to just be a few, but this program is really producing people into the big leagues. From the bar to the show, I like to write, and we have plenty of guys who have made it.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Chris. And good luck to all the Hoosiers as they get through spring training, and hoping to see a lot of them in various levels of pro ball in the next season. So, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer, Zach Horwitz, and Chris Feeney, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART.